Welcome to MIR News Now, the podcast for Henry Ford College's student newspaper, the MIR News. I'm Catherine Warden, Editor-in-Chief. I'm excited to bring to you the end of the three-part series we like to call Behind the Scenes. In each segment, we go behind the scenes at several local attractions in the Metro Detroit area. In part one, we visited Library Street Collective in Detroit and the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn. Last month, we brought you part two, which featured the Henry Ford Museum of American Innovation in Greenfield Village, which is located in Dearborn, Michigan. This month, MIR News copy editor Molly Mullen brings you behind the scenes at Belle Isle Park in Detroit. Molly began her visit to Belle Isle Park by speaking with Department of Natural Resources Belle Isle Park Supervisor Karis Floyd.
Okay, and our first question is, we just want to get some background on how Belle Isle ended up becoming a state park and under the jurisdiction of the Department of Natural Resources.
Okay, well, during the time that Detroit was struggling financially, basically they had $0 to put into Belle Isle. And so probably over the course of about 30 plus years, the island didn't have any type of maintenance or anything done. There were employees here, you know, the normal things, trash, pickup, things of that nature were taking place, but there were just no dollars to put into the park at all. So during the time when the city had to, I don't want to use the word giveaway, but when they had to have others kind of step in to help maintain items in the city, that's where it was brought up for the city to talk to the state of Michigan about running Belle Isle for them under a lease. So currently we have a 30-year lease in place, and part of what we do, the city still owns the island. We are just here to facilitate and run the island for the city of Detroit, and then also invest dollars into the park itself to help bring it back to where it was.
What can you tell us about, you know, how large is the island and what are some of the attractions that are there for the public?
Well, it's a urban park that's over 900 acres. You come into the park now, the Scott Fountain is probably the biggest attraction. We may do several weddings and things there in that area. It has over 2 million visitors just that come in the park just for the Scott Fountain. You come through, of course, you have the aquarium, which is one of the oldest aquariums in the country. You have the conservatory that we've been able to reestablish that as well. So if you want to come in and see beautiful gardens, that's available. You have the nature zoo, which is actually still run by the city of Detroit. But that's still another free attraction for people to come in. We do have the golfing center, which is back up and running. So you have the ability, if you enjoy golf, to come in and do a little golfing as well. Several picnic shelters that are just booked here all the time. So you've got that ability to go out and have a picnic here if you wish. Of course, we have an international beach, and that just on weekends is just packed full of people. So that's become a huge attraction on the island as well. And of course, the giant slide. It's been in place since I was a kid here, or longer, that people enjoy using.
What else can you share with us about how Belle Isle has changed over the years?
Well, just in 8 years that we've been here, we have basically gone through and assessed each facility on the island. We've gone through, and a lot of the facilities have now received new roofs, plumbing, electrical, any type of lead and asbestos removal. We've gone through and just basically restored. We're restoring the Scott Fountain. We have invested into the casino where people are holding their weddings and meetings. We have the Flynn Building that we've restored. That's another place for weddings and meetings and such. And we've invested to date around $80 million into the Belle Isle right now. Mm.
Shifting over to more recent times in the pandemic, obviously we want to talk about, you know, what are some ways you can share with us that the pandemic affected Belle Isle throughout all the closures and everything?
Well, it was tough. The original pandemic from 2020 and 2021, you know, it was something new, so it was something that you never dealt with before. So we had, we still, believe it or not, we still had over 5 million visitors during that time. I mean, we've gone from when the city had it to just under a million visitors to 5.25 visitors now. Mm-hmm. And during the pandemic, we were busier than we've ever been. You know, so we didn't see a reduction in people. We saw an increase. And so it was crazy for 2 years out here with the, because this is where people would come to get outside of their homes.
Yeah, definitely. And then is there anything that you'd like to share with us about your professional background and how you came to become the supervisor of Belle Isle Park?
Yeah, let's see. Well, I've done this for 37 years. February will be my 38th year with the department.
Congratulations.
And, thank you. And, you know, I basically, I was running Island Lake Recreation Area at the time, and my parks chief asked if I would be interested in managing Belle Isle on a, it was supposed to be a temporary basis. But I thought I was going to just go back to my other park and then they would have someone else here, but it ended up becoming a permanent position for me to do. Natural fit. I grew up just a few miles away from Belle Isle and spent a lot of time on Belle Isle. I always joke that, you know, Belle Isle was where I had my first kiss at. So, you know, it had some meaning for me. And to have the opportunity to help just facilitate and see Belle Isle become back to where it was and better.
Yeah.
Was just, it was a no brainer for me. So let's go. You know, a lot of work, you know, you do a lot of politics, a lot of work, but it's been pretty rewarding.
What else can you tell us about what being the park supervisor entails?
We have a lot of different aspects out here from what I do on a daily basis. So I could be dealing with the city council one day and you could have something happening or coming down from the governor's office. And, you know, then of course you have your day to day with your employees that you have to make sure that things are getting done on the island. You know, so my day is a lot of meetings. You know, I do a lot of interviews as well, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it just comes with the job.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of trainings, you know, a lot of community events. You're really out in the community, getting to know the community and talking to the community, finding out what they want here. So we have a lot of listening sessions, mm-hmm. To talk to the people. I do a lot of recruitment, just from trying to find folks that would like to have a career in the DNR. Mm-hmm. And we run a lot of youth employment programs. So I do a lot of that with recruitment, with working with the kids as they come out and trying to show them different careers within the DNR. So that's pretty much where my day is.
What can you tell us about your experience this summer having national media attention on Belle Isle thanks to the reopening of the Giant Slide?
Well, for a guy like me, it was a surprise with all the social media because we had already been running the slide for many years. Mm-hmm. And I guess what caught me off guard, which is simply maybe people forgot that it was here. I know we had a lot of newer type users that have never seen anything like it before. And but we had a lot of people that have grew up with the Giant Slide like I did.
Right.
So it gained a lot of new users. Had a lot of people still returning that, you know, because for 2 years we couldn't run the slide because of the pandemic. So
right.
And I think that was maybe the disconnect, was because it hadn't been running for 2 years, and then all of a sudden we had permission to reopen it. And then so many people were coming out and you know, it was different. I mean, I ended up doing a television show in Japan. You
oh
know,
my
because
goodness.
Because they've never seen anything like it before. And you know, I've gotten people to call me, they want to open up a giant slide in their city.
Really?
Yeah. So it touched base with a lot of people. You know, I was still amazed at the I mean, I had like 56 reporters that wanted to go down the slide. it's like, really? didn't you guys experience this? I said, no, we never experienced this. We didn't know anything about this.
And
I'm like, wow, okay, well, so it's, even the attorney general came out here from our state and went down the slide. So it just opened up the eyes to a lot of people that had never had an opportunity to enjoy the slide. So it was good to see.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were actually under the impression that it hadn't been open for a while.
Yeah,
I heard some people who were saying, this hasn't been open since I was a kid in the 80s. And I'm like, well, I definitely wasn't born in the 80s. And I remember it being open at some times, but I just wasn't sure what the timeline was there. So
yeah, it's been, it opened in 1956.
Wow.
It had been in operation with the city of Detroit up until early 80s, and they had to shut it down because the original slide, it was time to replace it. So that's why they had to shut it down for a while. And then when they bought the new slide, and then they reopened it, and it's been operating since. And then when we got to the pandemic, then we had to close it down for those 2 years. And but up until that time, one of the biggest requests when we got on the island was, will you be opening up the giant slide?
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah, so we made sure that it was a priority to get it up and running, and then we went from there. So it's been, we were doing over 30,000 riders a year.
Wow.
But, so that's why it caught me off guard with so much media attention.
Definitely. Yeah, I understand that because, like I said, I think a lot of people were thinking that it hadn't been open for a long time, but I guess that was a misconception. And so can we expect to see the giant slide open again next season?
It will be starting in May, about pretty close to Memorial Weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We'll run it from that time until Labor Day weekend.
Will there be any changes, or will it be the same operations as it has been for the past year?
No changes, same operation.
All right, great. And so what can you tell us about what the Department of Natural Resources, because I know that we have the Conservancy who runs, mm-hmm. The conservatory and the aquarium, and the Detroit Zoo runs the Nature Center. What are some of the specific areas and facilities that you can tell us about that are run by the Department of Natural Resources?
Well, we have the boathouse. We have the athletic complex that we're responsible for, the golf course that we're responsible for, the beach area that the DNR takes care of. We actually do run the conservatory. It's our stewardship program that actually does that. And then, of course, the Belle Isle Conservancy takes care of the aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else on the island is pretty much our responsibility. So from our headquarter building to the beach, to the trails, we take care of all that.
Earlier in the interview, you did touch on some of the improvements that have been made since DNR came into the island. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about regarding that? Or
yeah, we probably one of the biggest things that I enjoy is with the ADA accessibility. So we're able to add some canoe kayak accessible launches on both sides of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And those have been extremely popular. We also have been able to bring more vendors onto the island because one of the biggest requests, believe it or not, is food. And so we've been able to add vendors to the island to help with that. So those have been some of the most notable things that really requested by the general public. So I'm happy to see that going on.
What do you personally most enjoy about Belle Isle?
Probably, like my, one of my biggest areas that I like is called Sunset Point, because you stand out on Sunset Point and you can see the entire city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you look left, then you're looking at the city of Windsor. And that's just, it's a great location. And that's probably one of my favorite points of the park. And then basically just the Scott Fountain is another one of my areas that I really like. Just because it's just really just a great area, and to see so many people that travel from around the world to come here to take a picture at the Scott Fountain.
Right.
It's pretty cool. So
speaking of that, what do you recommend for any first-time visitors to Belle Isle?
Well, of course, first I would recommend that you just tour the island first. Just take a drive around. You'll see a lot of different locations that you can just pull off and park and just kind of enjoy the scenery, especially if you're coming through and if you just want to sit down and have a cup of tea. You know, it's a great place to pull off and park and just you're looking at the river all the way around the island. And then I would suggest that you go over to the Dawson Museum, and you can see all the history about Belle Isle and also about our navigation history that's included with the Detroit River and also Belle Isle. And go a little further up. A lot of times the Coast Guard will offer tours of their area, and you can kind of learn a little bit more about what they do on the island and also on the river. I also tell people to go out to the lighthouse. We have one of the oldest and the only marble lighthouse in the country. So I always point that out for people to make sure that they stop by there to go and see the history of the lighthouse. We've got several trails. I tell people if you want to, right now we're putting in, as part of the new trail system that will take you all the way up to the UP. Wow. The Iron Bell Trail is actually the starting point here at Belle Isle. So I tell people to just walk it, because you'll be able to walk the actual trail around the entire park. And then if you're really a biker and you want to do a little biking, you can just take it and it takes you along the trail and you can go as far as you want to go. So it just depends on what type of biker you are. And if you want to picnic, you want to swim, I just tell people just try to experience Belle Isle. The aquarium has a lot of nice displays with a lot of the fish. And then if you want to walk through the gardens, you know, it's so peaceful. Then we have the Olaf Garden as well, which was just added to the park. And so now you can go through the conservatory and you walk across the street, and now you've got the Olaf Garden as well. And so you get a whole, it's the whole shebang of things to do when you come out to Belle Isle. If you want to rent a bike, if you want to rent a kayak canoe, you know, we've got all that for you now.
And so kind of segueing, like what you brought up with the trail system and everything, I know you mentioned earlier that the DNR, am I correct, you're 8 years into the 30-year lease on the park.
Yes, that's correct.
So what are some of your plans for Belle Isle in the next 22 years?
Well, in the next 22 years, the first phase of that is like the conservatory. We're replacing the glass on the conservatory building. So that's like a $10 million project right now. It's just starting this month, actually. We are still looking to decide on what we want to do. To give you an example, with the old zoo, we've been working with the Michigan State University and also with the University of Michigan. And we've been working with the students that are helping to design how to use the area in the future. You know, so we've got that going on. We've got a big master plan that's happening, which we're gonna start. We've got about 17 meetings that are set up where we will meet with the community, all the stakeholders, and city council. We'll be meeting with a whole lot of people to get their opinion on what they want to see, or how would they like to see Belle Isle look 20 years from now. And then we've got like a traffic plan that's being put in place, because we now have an island that's attracting 5 million visitors, which it was never designed to do.
Right.
So now we've had to look at the parking and look at the traffic flow and see if there are different things we can do to alleviate a lot of the heavy traffic on the island. So we've got that study going on as well, and there'll be a lot of stakeholder meetings with that'll be happening to kind of dictate what the next 20 years are going to look like for Belle Isle. We are looking at also trying to take some of our old buildings and to see how we can really fit that building can fit into what we're trying to look for. You know, do you bring a Starbucks in where people might want to go in and just be able to read a book or something inside the old police station, for example? That was one of the buildings that we were looking at to say, hey, what can we do with this building? We have the original building, which is actually called the White House. My office used to be in that building, but we had to move out of there and into this facility. But now we're looking to, you know, do we bring that building back as an actual museum and have it looking like it did back when it was on the island originally, so that people can come in and see that as part of a type of museum on the island. So we've got a lot of different ideas. There's just a lot of things. People are always requesting everything from the old horse stable. People want horses back on the island. You know, we just, a lot of people are coming up with different ideas, and we're just trying to see what fits now and then what doesn't fit.
And that is all I have for today. Once again, okay. Thank you for your time.
Now Molly speaks with Belle Isle Conservancy Engagement Coordinator, Io Thomas.
What can you share with us about the Conservancy and what its goal is?
Yes. So I would like to take a point of privilege, if I could, and just clarify, I think, something that we get a lot, which is confusion between the conservatory, which is a facility, and the conservancy, which is the organization. And so a conservatory is an entity. It's a place. I would say that the word over the years has had kind of variations of meanings, but the way that it's used now is to talk about a covered facility that is used to house and protect plants from external elements, so primarily weather. So just want to provide that for clarity. And then the conservancy, even we do it sometimes, right? The Conservancy is an organization. Typically, conservancies are private and nonprofit organizations. They partner with a municipality. In our case, we partner with both the city and the state, but primarily the state of Michigan, to support Belle Isle. And so park conservancies support, obviously, parks through that same framework. As a nonprofit park conservancy, Our mission is to protect, preserve, restore, and enhance the natural environment, historic structures, and unique character of Belle Isle as a public park for the enjoyment of all, now and forever. And so I want to just share with you really quickly what our focus areas are. So it's people. So that is doing things like managing a volunteer program. And also providing programming to the public. So free public events that people could attend and participate in. Planning, which is things like assessments of various facilities, understanding what needs might be necessary, right? Participating in any relevant studies that enhance either the physical space or some other element or component of the park. Programming, which I kind of alluded to a little bit earlier, which is free. That also includes our educational support, which is partnerships and our outdoor aquatic series and things like koi festival, spring cleanups. Those things are considered programming. And then the last area, of course, is preservation. And so that is ensuring that the facilities, for instance, the aquarium is 118 years old, right? So you want to be sure that the facilities can be there, you know, as long as it makes sense for them to continue to be of service and support to the public. And so those are our four focus areas.
What can you tell us about any changes that the Conservancy organization has gone through since it was founded?
Yes. So I would like to start by sharing that the Conservancy has a long legacy on Belle Isle, in that we were established through a merger of four volunteer organizations. And so those organizations are the Friends of Belle Isle, the Belle Isle Botanical Society, the Belle Isle Women's Committee, and the Friends of Belle Isle Aquarium. And so those four organizations have been working independently through various mechanisms and, of course, through their own specific interests to support Belle Isle. And in 2009, they thought, you know, it's better if we work together. We can really elevate our support. And so the merger process began. And since that time, we've seen, I would say, quite a few things. Definitely, we've evolved to from being a specifically or exclusively volunteer organization to a team of professional staff. So we have husbandry staff that are specific to the needs of animal care. We have professionals who work in communications and events and education and interpretation and programming and community engagement. operations, all of those things. So we were able to build upon the work that was started through those four volunteer organizations. And so, yeah, I would say that's the simplest way to say it. And it has not, those transitions have allowed us to just enhance the commitment and passion to Belle Isle.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did not know that. And so how long ago about was it? Like, in what time period was the merger?
Yep. So the merger started in 2009, and actually we're celebrating 10 years this year. So officially in 2012, we came on board as Belle Isle Conservancy, the formal entity. And so, yeah, 10 years.
Congratulations. Happy 10
Thank
years.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you mentioned the aquarium earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Conservancy connected to the aquarium.
Yep. So Belle Isle Conservancy is the proud custodian of the Belle Isle Aquarium. That what that means is that we manage, of course, day-to-day operations. We also manage programming, capital improvements, all of those things that might be related, excuse me, to the Belle Isle Aquarium.
You know, you did also mention the age of the aquarium, and I believe, is it correct that it's the oldest in America?
So yes, there are a few, I would say, technicalities around that, but we are, I can say it this way, beyond a shadow of doubt, we are one of the oldest. I think there's a little bit of contingency around, there was a period when the aquarium was closed to the public. And so I think that kind of challenges the, not validity, but the wording of that. But yes, we are one of the oldest aquariums.
What are some of the changes that the aquarium has gone through in its 118 years?
So I can say over the years, the aquarium has gone through many, many changes. We've seen, obviously, the change in species. We've seen a change in, you know, staffing and programming and some of those other things. But what I really want to focus on, if that's okay, is the last 10 years. And I think that's, I really want to speak to that.
There's 100 to cover, so.
Yeah. So I would like to focus on that because I can speak to what the Conservancy has done. Right. And I would like to keep kind of succinct to what I know for sure, right? Let me start by giving a little context. So in 2012, when we came into the aquarium as a management entity, what we were basically up against was an aquarium that had been offline in many ways. So obviously the Friends of Belle Isle Aquarium had been doing work, they had been enhancing, they had been caring for the species that were in there at the time, but many of the tanks were offline. And so what has happened since that point is our professional staff again has come in along with, in partnership, I do want to share that it is in partnership with many of those volunteers and continued supporters. They've been able to restore tanks. They've been able to bring, we're almost at 100% capacity of tanks online. We have seen our interpretive and education programming expand. So we went, you know, we're able to offer field trips and, you know, support tour groups and Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and, you know, all of those who are interested in being educated through that facility. And we've also been on a mission to expand the aquarium. We know that it is, of course, first and foremost, an animal care facility. Mm-hmm. But one thing that we've noticed is that the aquarium is also a cultural hub.
Right.
So the aquarium serves as a place that people come for people things. You know, we've done programming outside of the aquarium that is related to, of course, the mission and the facility, but speaks to a broader interest to see the aquarium as a centralized space. So we deal with things like water conservation, ensuring or encouraging and uplifting plastic-free waters, water education, and things that are related to water education. And of course, other cultural programming and seeing the aquarium as a centralized space for those things to occur. And so, yeah, I would say that is what we've seen primarily and what we hope to continue to expand on.
You know, obviously over the past few years, we have the COVID pandemic. So what are some of the adjustments that had to be made in those 2 years?
Well, let's see, where would I want to go with that? I want to actually start with the silver lining. So naturally, like many of our peers and many institutions, of course, there was a pause in service to the public. But what that allowed for the aquarium was for our staff our staff team that's over there, the husbandry team, et cetera, to take some time to really put some TLC into the aquarium in ways that they're not able to do when there's a, you know, continuous service to the public. And so we saw tank repairs. Again, we saw new tankscaping. We saw things that really just allowed for a refreshed experience once we were able to welcome the public back into the space. So that I would say that that's the primary thing, but I do also want to highlight that having that pause in service really created, it did kind of create some challenges. So we are proud to maintain the aquarium as a free space to the public. So in any time you visit, you know, there's no charge, but we do primarily, or we are able to support that and offset that with, to a certain percentage, with donations. And so when people can't visit the facility, right, obviously those donations don't come in. And another thing that I really want to acknowledge is that once people began to return to the aquarium, obviously we know the economy was not the same. And so people didn't necessarily have as much to give. People didn't have as much discretionary income. So yes, you can still visit the aquarium. And yes, you may still want to give, but the amount that you're able to give is different. And so, you know, we feel the impact of that as well, knowing that people either want to give or have given historically. And now we just are seeing less funds in that, less contributed income in that way. Yeah, fewer donations, you know, just it means challenge.
You know, let's say over the past 10 years since the Conservancy has been, you know, kind of homogenized organization or whatever, and since they've been custodian of the aquarium, what are some of the improvements that have been made to the aquarium and the island?
Okay, so speaking again to the aquarium improvements, so we've seen things again like tank repairs. We've seen the not only repairs, but we've seen each of the tanks now full with some sort of species. We having a conservation kind of focus, we are able to care for endangered species. We're able to care for species that are near extinction. We are able to provide greater service through things like quarantine facilities and increasing our animal care, pursuing AZA accreditation. Those are some of the things that we're able to do, which really speak to the enhancements that have occurred at the aquarium over the last 10 years. And of course, things that we hope to continue into the future as well.
And so is there anything you'd like to share about your own professional background and how you've come to work with the Conservancy?
Sure, I can share. So I have a professional training. I have a master's of arts in arts and cultural management from Michigan State University. And so when I finished that degree in 2018, I joined the Conservancy. Actually, that would have been winter of 2018. So in 2019, I joined the Conservancy working in events and then have since evolved to now be part of our community engagement team. And so looking at how, you know, that background in museums and leadership, which was my specialization, has allowed me to come into this team and really integrate and be a member of the team that understands and focuses on data, that focuses on relationships, that focuses on sharing and collecting information and programming.
What programs and events does the Conservancy has for the upcoming winter?
We will be open the 23rd of December. We'll be open the 26th of December through the through New Year's Eve. So people can still schedule tours and come by for some of those visits. We do some field trips during that time. So teachers can schedule field trips, private groups, whether it's, you know, a group of maybe homeschool students or scouts, or we even see people who just have a group of people that they want to bring to the aquarium for a private kind of visitation. So all are welcome to schedule private tours as well.
And kind of to finish up, would you like to tell us about any plans that the Conservancy has for the future, maybe specifically like within the next 5-10 years?
So another thing that I think I maybe glossed over a little bit is another thing that came out of the pandemic was revisiting our strategic plan. And so we have a strategic plan that will take us through like 2027, which is a little bit closer to 5 years than to 10. But in doing that, we will spend our time focusing on our strategic plan, which deals with advocacy, which deals with valuable and relevant programming and partnerships. And of course, through those three things, we anticipate that we'll see an increased capacity for us to be of service to the park and its users. And so we will focus primarily on that. And outside of that, we intend to focus on fundraising, which of course ensures our sustainability, which is the, I feel like maybe the fourth leg of that kind of that chair or that table that I just mentioned.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Molly ended her visit to Belle Isle Park by speaking with Amy Green, director of Belle Isle Nature Center.
So to start out, I mean, why don't we just say, you know, what are the current business hours of the Nature Center that has recently reopened?
Oh, sure. We are open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. every day. We're only closed 3 days a year. That's Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, and New Year's Day.
And now for the remodel that recently happened, obviously you guys recently just opened. So what changes were made and what was added during that remodel?
I will start by letting you know on our website, there are some before and after pictures. So if you need visuals that go along with some of the things that I'm sharing, the facilities structure hasn't changed very much. It was built in the late 70s. It's very interesting, three circle kind of shape. I like to say we were here before the Renaissance Center, and so, you know, we're just one story big, but we're all those concentric circles. So the most dramatic changes were in terms of animal welfare and care and interactive things for people to do, the whole theming of the place. Before, there always had been great animal care and welfare, but now all of the habitats are immersive, floor to ceiling, zookeeper access, and bigger. So those updates were pretty significant, which makes it better for everybody. And I'll go on and on about that if given the chance, and the intentionality behind the theming of those habitats as well. The other biggest changes happened with the things that the humans will do when the people come here. So I'm going to talk a little bit now about what we do and why we do what we do. Here at the Belle Isle Nature Center, we did close in March 2020 when the rest of the world shut down also. And we evacuated the animals. We remained closed until last June. We did attempt to reopen. Second wave came in and we just kind of stopped that. So last June, we returned to programming. We realized we had the nature and not the center. And you alluded to the fact that there's a lot of folks coming to the island. And we learned among all of the state parks, there was record attendance during the pandemic years because people could go outside. So we turned to outdoor only programming, which is easy when you're a nature center. That and all of our previous and ongoing programming, it informs the work that we do and our heart behind why we do it. So the real focus here, which I'm taking a long time to get to in terms of the rest of the renovations, is about Detroit nature, urban nature, neighborhood wildlife. Gosh, there are so many great nature centers, but typically when people think of nature centers, it's kind of cozy and ski lodge-like and out somewhere. And our intention here, both with the physical place and with the programming that we do, is to kind of flip that and say, hold on, you know, nature isn't somewhere out there. Nature is where you are. And wherever you are, you're sharing space with other living things. You could live in an apartment on the 10th floor, and you're still not living in isolation from nature. When you're walking across the sidewalks and you're wondering what's in the cracks in the sidewalks, like I did when I was a little kid living in the city next to a vacant lot, right? And that's the experience of a lot of people. And that's what's represented here, that nature isn't for other people. It's already where you are. You don't have to go somewhere for it. You just have to maybe have an opportunity to become more aware of it and think about your belonging in that. And that's the other aspect of the work that we do here, is validating that sense of belonging and significance in nature. Your experience might be different than mine or somebody else's, and that's okay. So nature in the city can be for everybody. It shouldn't feel like, especially in the children's programming that we do, I don't like that deficit focus where if children don't have access to this, then somehow they're not a commodity for the future's stewardship. Like, that's not what it's about, right? Given the opportunity, kids will, they'll see it, they'll play, they know what to do. And we wanted to open that up for them. So for example, where my office used to be, and you might be hearing it soon while I'm talking, on the other side, right where the entrance is what we call the young learner space. And it's literal tunnels for kids to crawl through, like ants and worms, and do that work of childhood where work is play and play is work. And they have some busy things to do, digging tunnels and storing food and literally being with the dandelion roots and the cracks in the city sidewalk. And there's still nature there and things that people have left behind, like a bread bag clip or a car key or something like that. So there's intentionally through here always this intersection of the built and natural environment. And then our kind of nudge into, and what does that mean with how you as a person are sharing your space with other living things? So another big feature here is a sewer tunnel. It's a replica Detroit sewer tunnel, which is not what people typically think of when they go to a nature center. But as humans, we need infrastructure, and we can think about what we're, you know, what we're doing and where things end up, right? We have an adopt a drain and adopt a beach program where we're showing how your litter moves through systems and can impact wildlife. So that's kind of highlighted in there. There's some other really cool things like a tree frog habitat where kids can kind of go underneath and pop their heads up and see the frogs, and our mud puppy habitat. But this used to be places where there were concrete walls are now fully immersive habitats, which is so exciting. And we've done programming with high schoolers and conservation work for a decade plus about the mud puppies, which are kind of our mascot animal here, because they're indicator species, and their health indicates to us the health of the Detroit River. And so that's a profound thing that we highlight here to help people connect to their space, right, you know, right in their own area. There's some cool stuff about trail cameras and how we interact with wildlife, or how wildlife interacts with our spaces, even when we're not right there. So looking for animal tracks or trail cameras and who's been there. And kind of a love letter to the Detroit Boxing Gym, who stayed with us through all of the pandemic and gave us a place to do programming with the kids in the city. We were putting trail cameras up in the alleys there with the kids. So in all of our murals, this is something that is not in any signage there, but is kind of cool and exciting to me. Every single mural at the Nature Center is an actual representation of a place in the city where the animal was seen. So we went to iNaturalist, geotagged the animal, or found the geotag of it, took a Google Street shot, translated that to our mural. So it's really place-based. And so you'll see sidewalks and streetlights and, you know, those things that are not typical when people think of nature, but are very typical for neighborhood nature. And we've got some really cool pollinator features to help people explore how pollinators explore the world, how the impact that we can have, the simple things we can do, understanding how it's not just honeybees, although we love our honeybees. There's so many other pollinators out there that are important. So we also expanded and kind of redeveloped our backyard nature play space, which is an extension of a lot of the programming that we do.
So another thing that I was going to ask that I think you kind of touched on talking about the pandemic is just, you know, for some insight into the remodeling process and, you know, everything that went on and how the remodel actually came about. I mean, from what you said, it kind of sounds like, you know, you were not doing any indoor programming during the pandemic. So, you know, that was obviously a good time to remodel, if I understood that correctly. But, you know, what are just some other information you can give us?
Yes. We had been planning and developing pre-pandemic our ideas on how we wanted to address the needs of the space. For the animals, for the staff, for the guests. So that had been coming together for some time. And then once we realized that we were going to remain closed, of course, when everybody else was starting to reopen, that's when we said, okay, let's do this now. And so then for the past year, you know, the contractors were on site and the exhibit design the fabricators and, you know, designers were on site for almost a year, putting it all together, you know, behind the scenes while we were outside with everybody on the island.
Great. And then I also wanted to highlight if you have any upcoming programs or events for the winter time in the next few months, because, you know, everyone's always looking for things to do in the winter, you know, especially with kids.
Yeah, that's what we do. All right. So just about every weekend, if you check our website, every weekend we've got some kind of nature and art hike or a walk to the lighthouse or something for families or individuals to do. A big event coming up in January on the 28th is our Winterfest event. We did that last year with no inside space at all. And almost 500 people came out and we set up all kinds of opportunities for folks to understand nature's nature in the wintertime too, you know? So there are fun things that you can do and experience the outdoors a little differently, whether, you know, it's learning how to snowshoe, or maybe, you know, for the younger kids, spraying colored water onto snow. So just kind of a broad experience of things folks could do outside. Of course, we had hot cocoa and s'mores and things like that. But it's a kind of just a celebration of the outdoors in the wintertime. So Winterfest is a big one coming up.
And then, you know, just so we can give our readers some background about you and how you came to work with the Nature Center, you know, what can you tell us about your background and your history with the Detroit Zoo Department?
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to say we are operated by the Detroit Zoological Society. I was a teacher. I was a mostly middle school, upper elementary school science teacher. For about 13 years, I taught all the different grades. And my passion was in those things that were meaningful, right? We would do square foot gardening with the kids and recycling and all the stuff that the curriculum wouldn't, like the forced test-based curriculum wouldn't allow for, then we would do on Saturdays and after school. And I realized that's where the magic is, and there's probably a place out there to do that. And I found the job at the Nature Center about 7 years ago. I started as a curator of education, and after a few years became the director of Nature Centers.
Our last question, this might be a big question, and I'm not expecting you to, you know, spill the beans on everything or, you know, have an immediate answer ready. You know, the Belle Isle Zoo has not been in operation for around 40 years now. And, you know, is there just any plans to reopen or use that space for anything? Like I said, I know
that's a really good question. So yeah, that zoo has been closed for a very long time. One thing that is kind of cool is that our front desk, which is also a brand new feature here, is built from reclaimed materials from the old zoo. So it's a little bit of our mission and sustainability, and also kind of a nod to the past. Belle Isle was a city park, technically is a city park, and is under a 30-year lease from the DNR. What that means is that space where the old Belle Isle Zoo was is not connected at all to the Detroit Zoological Society. Okay. It belongs presently to the DNR, and in the future, should that lease expire, to the city of Detroit. So we don't really articulate what happens there. However, the DNR, it has been here in their responsibility for the island for 10 years now. And in the first 10 years, fixed the roads, put in the infrastructure with the lighting, fixed the bathrooms, put in the trails. And now they're looking at that space. In the past, it's been just over a year, they've had some design charrettes with Michigan State University. For island people, island neighborhood people. And then there was a survey that went out to the entire state of Michigan for folks to weigh in on what they thought of that space and what its future could be. So now the DNR is coming together to look at, you know, what are the next 10 years and how that space can be programmed. Obviously, the first thing they need to do is make it safe and take down some of those old structures that are kind of crumbling. And we recognize that so many people have sentimentality, a history, connections, and stories, which are permanent, right? They live within us. And at the same time, now we're looking at the future of what that space could be. I've never heard that it would be a zoo again. operated by the Detroit Zoological Society, especially the focus on animal care and welfare and how that's shifted over the past 20 years or so. You know, I haven't heard anything like that, but I do expect that whatever it becomes in that space will be exciting.
Thank you so much for your time and for all the really valuable information that you gave us. It was really nice speaking to you, and that's all I have for you today.
Pleasure. I can't wait for you to come out. In the meantime, get outside.
That was Molly Mullen reporting for the Mir News, Henry Ford College's student newspaper. This concludes Mir News Now podcast series we call Behind the Scenes, where we visited several local attractions in Detroit and Dearborn, Michigan. Check with us next month when Mir News staff will have a lively discussion about the future of animation. This is Catherine Warden. Thank you for listening.